On our discussion from last week, this week's Parsha, Emor El HaKohanim B'nei Aharon, we are instructed that the Kohanim L'Nefesh Lo Yitama B'Amav, that Kohanim are not allowed to be Metami themselves. They have to make sure to stay away from cemeteries, from dead bodies. And what I'd like to talk about today, just by way of continuation from last week, is let's first back up and talk about a Kohen interacting with a Goses. As we know, unfortunately, when someone is in the end stages of life, we have a phase that we refer to as the gesisa, which means they are in the throes of death. And the question always is, how exactly do we define the parameters of that period of time? When is one considered to be a goses? When is one considered to be actually in the very end of life? And that has very far-reaching consequences, as we'll see in a couple of minutes. Once a person is in the stage of gesisa, it's important that we know about it. So the general understanding in the world is that gesisa is a process that takes 72 hours. The 72 hours before death are considered to be when a person is considered a goses. And this is not necessarily the definition that we go by today. Dr. Abraham writes in the Nishmas Avram, my father has told me this on many occasions as well, that it's very hard to define exactly what a goses is and what it is not. And they both work on the assumption that it's not necessarily 72 hours. You can have times when the process of gesisa will be much more expanded than just 72 hours. It can be a few weeks already if the person's in the process of death for a while, or perhaps not. Dr. Abraham writes in the Nishmas Avram as follows. He says, Eineni makir hagdara meduyekes shel hamatzav shel gesisa. I cannot define a clear, exacting halachic definition of what it means to be a goses and how long that process is. He says, when he consulted with Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach about this question, bottom line, he asked him, Rebbe, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, tell me, how do I define as a doctor what is considered the process of the onset of gesisa? He said, Anali ata rofe. He answered me, you're the doctor, I don't know. I'm the rabbi, you're the doctor, you're the one who understands the condition of the patient. I can certainly not give a clear definition of when it's called gesisa and when perhaps it's not. And from here, Dr. Abraham made the assumption that it's not necessarily always going to be the same for all different patients. For some people, they're very healthy until the end. Not very healthy. There's obviously many problems, internal organs. But it's not until the very end that we would consider them a goses. And in other conditions, we would say that the person perhaps would be a goses for a much more extended period of time. Be it as it may, in the Maseches Smachos we are told, goses harehu kechai l'chol davar. Even though a person is in the throes of death, even though we know that they are at the very end of life, we consider them to be a live human being for all intents and purposes. And the Rambam quotes this lahalacha, and the Shulchan Aruch writes the same thing. And therefore the Shulchan Aruch writes that if you're called on as a Hatzalah member, as an EMT, as a doctor, to go and treat a patient on Shabbos who is a goses, the Shulchan Aruch clearly states, and the Mishnah Berurah writes this as well in the Bira Halacha, that we have an obligation to treat them the same way we would be Mechal Shabbos to treat somebody else who has the opportunity to live a long life. So the Bira Halacha writes as follows, Matzu Chai, what if somebody has a dangerous or something that we would consider maybe a fatal accident? But right now they're still hanging in the balance. We don't know exactly what's going on. Afal Pishan, it's Roseitz Mocho. He says the person's head was Rachmana Litzlan split in half, and you can tell that the condition is fatal. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Ve'eno Yeochel Lachlios Ki Ima'at. The Mishnah Berurah writes, and he cannot live longer than a very very short period of time. Still, he says, we would be Mechal Shabbos for that person. We would do whatever is necessary because Goses Harehu Kechai L'Chol Davar. That is the rule that we work off of. That is the assumption. Now, when one is unfortunately faced with a situation of Gesisa, either a close family member or a friend, one has to be very careful, because the Mishnah writes in Maseches Smachos, and this is also quoted Lahalach and Shulchan Aruch, you don't know what is perhaps going to hasten the death. By different things that you might do, it is very hard to know what might expedite the process. And therefore, says the Mishnah in Maseches Smachos, one has to be careful that maybe by you shutting their eyes while they're still alive, maybe for some reason that's going to trigger a response of them dying sooner. You never know. Or says the Mishnah, maybe by touching them in a certain way or moving the bed or putting it up or putting it down, you might think you're making them more comfortable, but perhaps you are hastening the death in some way. You are accelerating the process. And this is something that the Mishnah writes very clearly, Hanogea bo umezizo, somebody who does so without thinking carefully about whether or not this is really the right thing that's going to help the patient, harezeh shofech damim. You perhaps can be responsible as a shofech damim, as a murderer, because maybe you hasten the death, even though it was only a few minutes sooner than it otherwise would have been, but you never know, and therefore it says you have to be very, very careful when dealing with the goses in your close proximity that you do whatever it is that's necessary to help them, but nothing there perhaps can be detrimental. And the Mishnah goes on to say in the name of Rav Meir that this is comparable to a candle. Sometimes you have a candle that drips the little bit of oil at a time, and one drop of oil goes in, but if somebody puts their hand there, you just drop it up for 1 second, you stop the hole, and you don't allow the oil to drip in, the candle is going to extinguish, even though you didn't mean for it to go out. But sometimes that's what happens, and therefore, it says the Mishnah, you have to be very, very careful. So I had the great privilege this summer of being in Camp Simcha, where I met a lot of very special doctors and medical professionals, and some of them, unfortunately, are oncologists during the year who deal very closely with the stages of Gesisa, who deal very closely with this. So one of them told me the following, that she was in contact with Dr. Abraham, and Dr. Abraham, who is a very well-respected, not only doctor, but also a very well-respected Talmud Chacham, who has all of his halachic psukim from Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and other great gedolim, so he's a very trustworthy person. I know my father consults with him very often on medical issues. So Dr. Abraham was asked by this doctor the following question. When you have this principle that we run by, that when somebody's in the stages of Gesisa, you're not supposed to move them, you're not supposed to touch them. So the question was, when she was treating a young child who unfortunately was dying from cancer, the parents wanted to know, at what stage in the process do we have to stop holding this child? At what stage in the process do we stop engaging with the child like any parent would? At what stage do you say maybe we have to be concerned? Dr. Abraham's response to them was that you have to treat a goses like a human being. Which means, he said, if the goses needs to have a diaper change, you don't just say, oh, we're just going to let them, you know, remain dirty and we're not going to change the linens and we're not going to change the sheets because, you know, what's the difference anyway? He said you have to treat them like you would treat a normal human being. And he left that as a very fluid definition. It's hard to say exactly how you draw the line, and when we say that parents perhaps should, if they're ever in that horrible, unfortunate circumstance, whether or not they should stop being involved or not, it's a very heavy topic, but it's something that is very difficult to define, and it's a very difficult thing. I asked Rav Asher Weiss, if you see parents who are engaging with a child at a time when it's clearly the stages of Gesisa, would we have an obligation to tell them to stop? Would we have an obligation to tell them stop giving hugs and stop holding the hands and stop squeezing? And he said, absolutely not. We would not tell parents, we would not advise anything. You know, whatever happens then, you know, you cannot hold people totally responsible. It doesn't mean it's hefker. Doesn't mean they should do things that are silly or perhaps might affect the condition in a certain way. But again, this was the definition that Dr. Abraham gave, that you should treat them like a normal human being would be treated, and that is a very important definition. So one might ask, if that is the situation, that you're not allowed to engage, you're not allowed to touch a ghost, you never know what's going to happen if you do so, well then how can any medical professional be involved? So the answer to that is quite obvious, that certainly if a person is trying to engage the ghosts because you're trying to make them more comfortable, or you're trying to help them to have a quality of life for the remaining moments of their lives, or to have perhaps another few moments of life, if that's what they so choose, then you have every right to do that. And not only that, we also would assume that a Kohen who's an EMT or a paramedic or a medical professional or a doctor and knows, however you become a doctor, I don't know, that's what we spoke about last week, but if you have a Kohen who knows how to be helpful to this person, a very close family member who can be helpful in some way to calm the patient down, we would say that even a Kohen would be allowed to do that, because we consider a goses kechai l'chol hadvarim, and therefore we say, since it's a suffix of pikuach nefesh, the Kohen would have a right to be involved as he normally would with any other patient as well. Even more surprising is the Gemara in Maseches Bab Metzia, Kuf Yedalid, where we're told the story about Eliyahu HaNavi. So there the Gemara tells us that Eliyahu HaNavi was a Kohen, and yet he once performed a Tchias HaMesim on the child of the Isha Hatzarfatit. There was a woman, an almana, who lost her child, and she was beside herself. She couldn't believe it. And she consults with Eliyahu HaNavi what to do. Eliyahu HaNavi comes into the room, and he lies down on top of the child, and all of a sudden he performs a Tchias HaMesim. So Tosis asks the question, Heich hechya b'nashal almana? How was Eliyahu HaNavi allowed to engage in this child, kivin shekohen haya? He was a Kohen. A Kohen is not allowed to defile himself. He's not allowed to go and engage with a dead body. So how is Eliyahu HaNavi allowed to be engaged with this young child, even though it's for the purposes of Tchias HaMesim? Says Tosis, V'yesh Lamar, it seems the answer is, Shehaya bara lo sheyichayehu, l'kach hayomuter mishum pikuach nefesh. Eliyahu HaNavi knew that he had the power to be Mechaya HaMesim. It's a pretty unusual thing. But Eliyahu HaNavi knew, if I'm going to get involved, I'm going to be able to bring this child back to life. How can I stay away? I'm a Kohen, so what? But it's an issue of Pikuach Nefesh. Now that's surprising. Since when do you say Pikuach Nefesh? We never have this question because it's not relevant to us. But since when do you say Pikuach Nefesh applies to a person who already died? Over here you're dealing with a child who already died, and Eliyahu HaNavi says, it's Pikuach Nefesh, I can bring him back alive. So most of us don't think that way because we don't have the ability to perform a Tchiyas HaMeisim. But Eliyahu HaNavi, who thinks this way, says, how could I stay away? Yes, I'm a Kohen, but I'm going to defile my Kahuna because this is an issue of Pikuach Nefesh. Now, when speaking about issues of Gesisa and these kinds of difficult questions, it goes without saying, but it has to be said anyway. The Minchas Chinuch and many others talk about the fact, Afilu im yavo Eliyahu, says the Minchas Chinuch, I'm reading from his words, even if Eliyahu HaNavi himself will come and he will say, Shelo yihi ela adam chayim ela sha'a orega, that this person is only going to make it another 2 minutes, another 3 minutes, or another 30 seconds. Mikal makom. Still, we assume, HaTorah lo chilka bein horeg yeled, sheyesh lo lichyos kama shanim, lebein horeg zakin ben meya. The Torah does not differentiate between killing a healthy person and killing somebody who's at the very end of life. We do not have a right to be engaged in the act of ritzicha. It is considered murder regardless of the condition of the patient, and therefore, says the Minchas Chinuch, one has to understand that hahargo chayiv, somebody who goes and kills such a patient, is considered to be held responsible. And therefore, the Rambam writes in Ilchas Rotzeach, echad ahareg es abari, o hachola nota lamus, whether you are involved in the act of murder with somebody who's healthy, or the act of murder with somebody who's at the very end stages of life, afilu hareg es agoses, even if you murder somebody who's clearly at the throes of death, and we know they don't have time left, still, neharagalav, says the Rambam, you will be held accountable, you will be called a murderer, and we will administer punishment against you for being involved in that story as well. This is quoted clearly in Shulchan Aruch, and it's something one has to be very careful about. And this means even if it's a euthanasia, even if it's a consensual killing, even if it's authorized by the patient, him or herself, there is no difference. And the reason for that is because the Radvaz, one of the very early Achronim in the 1500s, he lived in Spain, he lived also in Svat. So the Radvaz writes a very beautiful line in his commentary on the Rambam. He says, "Lefi she'ein nafsho shel adam kinyano ela kinyan HaKadosh Baruch Hu," because our lives do not belong to us. We all belong to the Ribono shel Olam himself. Because the Pasuk says, "Hanefashos li heina," your nefesh belongs to me, the Ribono shel Olam says. And therefore, you have no right to make a consensual decision and say, I want somebody to take my life. You don't have a right to do that. Your life doesn't belong to you. Your life belongs to God himself. And therefore, this is really what the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, that we are all created al karchach ata notzar, val karchach ata chai, val karchach ata mei, says the Mishnah. We don't know when our time is going to come. We don't know why we're in this world. We don't know why certain things happen to us, but this is the way life is. And therefore, says the Mishnah, we have a right to assume that if the Ribono shel Olam put us here, it's for a purpose, and we have to be very careful never to aggravate that process, never to allow for it to happen sooner than it is supposed to come. So I'd just like to mention one final point, and that is what Dr. Abraham writes about giving a patient in the stages of Gesisa morphine. Now, says Dr. Abraham, this is a little bit of an issue that was raised because he says he spoke to Reb Shlomo Zalman about it, because every once in a while, again, if you have a very responsible doctor, I've been told that this is not always the case, but once in a while it happens, where because of administering morphine, which is obviously made to settle the patient and make them more comfortable, sometimes by administering the morphine, that can give a response of respiratory depression, and that will perhaps make the patient die sooner, sometimes, once in a while. What? It's not 100%. I just spoke to a doctor 3 minutes before the shiur to make sure it is not 100% at all. The doctor said if you're a responsible doctor who knows what they're doing, you administer the doses properly, it is not 100%. And we have an obligation as medical professionals to make sure that the patient is as comfortable as they can possibly be. Once in a while, it does happen. Maybe it happens more than once in a while. And once in a while, it happens because people are in a frenzy and they don't know exactly what to do when they're screaming and yelling. So there's too much pandemonium. But if you have a person who's very experienced, this is not supposed to happen. So he asked Reb Shlomo Zalman, if we're dealing with a goses, do we have a right to administer morphine when we know that sometimes the response is going to be that there will be respiratory depression and therefore the patient might die sooner? And Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, absolutely you should give it. Because he said, when that happens, it normally doesn't happen that immediately after giving the morphine, it is going to trigger that response. He said, we give them morphine in certain dosages. Yes, over time, something might happen. But he says, right now, our primary obligation is to care for the patient. And again, like Dr. Abraham said, our obligation toward a goses is to treat him like a human being, which is such an important definition. I think it says it all. You have an obligation to treat them like a human being. The same way, if you had any other human being who was suffering, you would do whatever you could to make sure that you alleviate the suffering as much as possible. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, we have no problem saying the same thing here and administering the morphine, even though it might, over time, make a response that will hasten the death. However, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, if you think that by administering zrika achas shel morphine, if you think that by giving one dose of morphine, alula lahapsik es neshima toha atzmit, if you think that it will immediately make the person stop breathing, then he says, asur liten lo atrufa, then that's actively killing the person, then certainly you're not allowed to do that. But he says, generally, that is not the situation, and therefore that is the heter that we have to administer the morphine in order to make the person more comfortable in the condition that they're in. Amir Tzashem, tomorrow, now that we understand what a goses is and what the practical ramifications are, we'll talk about how that applies to Kedushas Kahuna and whether a Kohen would be allowed to engage in the care, in the non-medical care of a goses, or perhaps they have to stay away.